Thank you for the beautiful sound of the shakuhachi, Leo. We have bird song. The building is singing in the wind. The water is high. There was a muskrat with a den under the tree on the lake, right in front of MZMC. That den is now underwater. So I have no idea what it's like to be a muskrat whose den is underwater. But maybe we can all take a minute to wish that little muskrat well. Nice to see you all this morning. I'm going to talk today about the body, the relationship of Buddhist practice, Zen practice to the body. It's a pretty big topic, so I'm not going to cover the whole thing. But we'll play around with this. So there's a very old sutra from the Pali Canon, the earliest sutras, in which the Buddha says, "It is in this very fathom-long body, with its perceptions and mind, that I declare there is a world, and there is transcendence of the world." I'm playing with the wording a little bit, but how many people have ever read actual Pali Canon texts? they're hard to understand. So I kind of retranslated just a little bit. But he says, "In this very fathom-long body, with its perceptions in mind, do I declare there is a world, and there is transcendence of the world." And so some spiritual practices have to do with sort of going beyond, you know, into a spirit realm, or maybe shedding this body and moving on. This tradition is about completely being this body, and in so doing, simultaneously going completely beyond whatever this body is, or whatever we may think about it. So I guess we could say this is a paradox. And this is a sort of a common tendency in Buddhist thinking. For example, the problem of human suffering being the central problem of Buddhism, what we do is we go completely towards the suffering that we have, and we don't run away from it, and in so doing so, we can go beyond it. Running away from it is not effective, in my experience. And Lord knows I have tried. So I'll talk a little bit, and then maybe we'll investigate our own bodies a little bit as well. So many of you are just practicing Zazen here. What is Zazen? Posture and breath. Body and body. Now, how fast does our mind turn Zazen into mind and mind? Very fast. As I like to say, mind is like this. Enough about me. What about me? But when we practice Zazen, our practice really is to be aware of the posture and be aware of the breath, or let the awareness rest in the body, the posture and the breath, or even just completely be the posture and the breath, simply sitting, just sitting. Not very fancy. So we have this dialectical, dialectical relationship between intimacy and transcendence. They appear to be opposites, but they have some harmony. Intimacy or transcendence, or we could say presence and impermanence. So I'm going to talk about a bunch of early Buddhist teachings in particular, but also some Zen teachings here, which really emphasize both being completely here with the body that's here, but also being aware that it's always going away. It's always going away. (Clears throat) Shitu, Shikyan, in the Song of the Grass of Hermitage, gives a number of practice instructions, but his most terse and final and complete one is, don't separate from this skin bag here and now. Don't separate. Intimacy. It's a skin bag. Go beyond it. It's not going to last. So, we probably all like the idea of being intimate with the body more than that it's a skin bag. I don't know. You know, I got up in the morning and really worked on my skin bag today. The skin bag language he takes is directly from the most clear and basic teaching on how to practice meditation in the early Buddhist teachings of the Pali Canon, which is the Four Foundations of Mindfulness Sutra. You get, the crazy thing about reading the Pali Canon is there's like 40,000 pages. No, there's like 120,000 pages, something, a lot of pages. And there's very little actual direct meditation instruction. It's kind of interesting. Kind of like Zen. I'm going to talk for 45 minutes and then it's just come back tomorrow and just sit and be your body. Yeah, funny tradition. But the Four Foundations of Mindfulness Sutra really lays out how early Buddhists, the best impression we can have of how early Buddhists practice meditation. The Four Foundations of Mindfulness are mindfulness of body, mindfulness of feeling, mindfulness of mind, and mindfulness of phenomena. The first foundation is mindfulness of body. And in Zen, we just never get beyond that. That's cool. So we usually don't go into all these other steps. We just keep coming back to this practice of the body and the breath. Because it's complete. And in fact, there is an addendum sutra to the Foundations of Mindfulness Sutra that says mindfulness of breathing is sufficient to realize everything within all, Buddha says, all of my teachings. So we can feel justified in our simple practice. So anyway, this mindfulness of body, which is like the beginning, the basis, the root, the foundation, is composed, it's broken down into six parts. Mindfulness of breathing, mindfulness of posture, mindfulness with clear comprehension, which is really hard to explain, so keep going. Mindfulness of the unattractiveness of the body, or we could say the skin bag. Mindfulness of the elements of the body, and mindfulness of the decomposition of the body after death. Hey, which one do you guys want to do? So I know a lot of people who have a pretty intense negative emotional reaction to the idea of practicing mindfulness of. So unattractiveness of the body, I just want to say it specifically is, what it says is you should visualize your body as a bag which contains yucky stuff like organs, feces, mucus, saliva, pus, bile. Not kidding. You guys having a good time yet? So this is kind of interesting, though, because, you know, the way we understand mindfulness around here, to a large extent, is like, you know, just being purely present. But it's very clear from the Four Foundations of Mindfulness Sutra that mindfulness includes visualization exercises. It is what you direct your mind towards, what your mind is full of. And that could be something that you imagine or make up. But it starts with mindfulness of body and breath. And like I say, we just don't go much beyond that around here for our meditation practice usually. But so we have this skin bag meditation. And then there's the elements, which is like the, in Indian thought, like they're, you could say kind of a basic metaphysics, is the world is composed of earth, water, air, and fire. This is kind of like, so he's saying you should meditate and think about how your body is made of these four elements, earth, water, air, and fire, which is pretty comparable to if we sat around and thought about how we are composed of molecules and atoms. So just seeing that we're just made up of some stuff that comes and goes, which is the most important thing, the impermanence of it, the changeability of it, is why it's here. Likewise, the last foundation, the last step in the foundation of mindfulness, which is mindfulness of body, is the charnel ground contemplation, which is, now what you're supposed to do is go actually to a place where they have decomposing corpses and they're burning them and actually look at them while you meditate. It's hard to do these days and doesn't sound very fun, but it says you may not be able to do that, so just sit and visualize them, and then it describes in detail, you know, the flesh rotting off the bones. And yet, like I say, people kind of go, ooh, what's up with that? What is up with this? The problem is, there is a danger in being deeply intimate with the body experience right now. It's pretty good sometimes. You think, well, what's wrong with that? Guess what happens when something's really good and you really like it? You want more! You want more! So there is a danger in pure intimacy with the body that we become, what we do is we cultivate attachment to bodily sensation. You might think, now that would never happen. Okay, let's try it for example. When you're on retreat, some people here do retreats here, have you ever noticed that when you're eating after you have been meditating for a few hours and you're giving every ounce of your attention just to the experience of eating, that it is amazing that you're eating oatmeal and it's like the best thing that has ever happened in the entire universe? How many people know what I'm talking about? Yeah, it's amazing. It's wonderful. And we see, look at what I do to my life. I eat every day and I miss this incredible opportunity to be alive and with what's happening. It's a wonderful, amazing thing. And yet, something funny often happens. I remember one Rohatsu Sesshin where there were like eight, that we have a board out there, no one can talk, we don't talk during, and there you can put like little notes to people on the bulletin board, you know, like, you write a note to the, you know, I think I might be getting sick, I'm going to go home. So, there's like eight notes to the cook. Oh, I think, I'm not sure the yogurt is vegetarian, or, you know, could you put more spinach in the dinners? We start to go, wow, this is really, really important. This food right here, this is all I've got, man. Because you don't have much on retreat. I'll tell you what, you don't have much. You've got like a wall. What can you do with him? Wall doesn't do anything for you. So, as we become really intimate with something, the tendency of human consciousness to turn the raw material of experience into suffering manifests an incredible capacity. Phenomenal capacity of human consciousness to turn the raw data of experience into suffering. Even the most joyful things. Wow! So, we talk a lot about impermanence. We talk about impermanence, I would say, to a large degree, because of the psychological acuity of the Buddha, who saw that it was, we're not really going to go beyond this tendency to turn life into suffering unless we become intimate with what is. And yet, we have to keep reminding ourselves that it's going to change. It's going to change. Something else. This is wonderful. Zen Center is wonderful. Suddenly, everyone here is driving you nuts. It'll happen. It'll happen. It's okay. You'll turn around again. And you'll see that these are beautiful people here to support you. So I'm just going to read a couple poems that talk, that express this relationship, this dual relationship between intimacy with the body and impermanence. And I'm not really going to talk about them a lot, I'm just going to read them. So here's one by a nun named Fa Yuan from China, 7th century nun, Phaiyuan. This body, without a self, can be compared to floating duckweed. This body with its troubles is exactly like a leaf in the wind. This cycle of life and death is just like that of night and day. And I'll just read it again. This body without a self can be compared to floating duckweed. This body with its troubles is exactly like a leaf in the wind. This cycle of life and death is just like that of night and day. And I'll read one more by one of the first Buddhist nuns named Dhamma, a contemporary of the Buddha. I've read this one before here. I wandered for alms. She's very old. I leaned on a stick. My whole body was weak and trembled. Suddenly I fell down and could see clearly the misery of this body. My heart was freed. So Dhamma, a very old lady, near the hour of death. When you fall down, when you're 80 years old, it's no joke. And yet, in intimacy with this experience of the pain and the fear of this fall, something opened up for her, a profound intimacy. So there's a small component of yoga called asana that has to do with the body. Sometimes you could say it's bending and stretching. So I guess in the U.S. we think yoga is bending and stretching a lot of times. But actually yoga is a very big tradition with many commonalities with Buddhism. And, you know, I don't know if you've noticed this. Yoga in the United States is like getting to be something about like how beautiful can I be? Mm-hmm. Right? It's like, well, let's take a break from yoga. How about you go to a place where people are exercising, and what you do is you put in your earbuds and you try and go as far away from your body as you can. So that's maybe an extreme version of separating from the skin bag, or because it's skin bag, it's painful. Oh, it's painful to run, so I don't want to experience it. So I'm going to do the thing to this body that I have to carry around or whatever so that it will look good and it'll work in 20 years. Right, so we have this complete separation from the moment, complete objectification of ourselves. This is the opposite of what this practice is about. And, there are many wonderful yoga instructors who will draw awareness into the body as we practice, but there is a tendency for this to have a lot to do with objectification of the body. You know, feminists helped us out when they pointed out, hey, objectifying people is not nice. Well, guess what? Why do it to yourself? Why do it to yourself? So when we practice mindfulness of body, this isn't about sort of looking at the body. It's in the mindfulness Foundations of Mindfulness Sutra, it says mindfulness of the body in the body. Deep awareness of the experience of the body in itself. So we're beginning to shed this sense of separation between body and mind and merely be the awareness that is bodily sensation. So let's experience some bodily sensations. Now I'm going to ask everyone to just take a brief stock of the physical space in which they're sitting in relation to other people. Because in a minute, you're both going to be closing your eyes and moving your body. So don't club people. Okay, so you can just kind of have some spatial awareness here. Yeah, yeah. Right, get out your yardstick. Okay. And this exercise is one that I came up with for working with the Dharma Family Sunday kids. And it went really well, so we'll see if you guys are anywhere near as good as the little kids are. Basically. So I'm going to ask that you all just find a leg posture that would be the one you would use for meditation. So something with a stable base. And then you can just let your eyes close and draw the awareness to the breath, so finding the sensation in the body through the awareness of breath. So now, just think of being very calm and at ease and relaxed. And I'm going to count to three, and nothing may change. But just when I get to three, just let your body express this sense of calm, ease, and relaxation. One, two, three. And just notice the sensations in the body. Now I want you to, I request that you think about being extremely angry. You may even imagine a situation that causes you to be angry, or just think of the feeling. And don't hold back here, except for don't hit anybody. And just keep your eyes closed, and on the count of three, bring your body into the posture of intense anger. Don't move your legs, so let the upper body do this expression. One, two, three. And just notice the sensations in the body. And now just return to this posture of relax, calm, and ease. Allow the thinking mind to rest. And now, call to mind the feeling of great sadness. People all over the world, at this moment, many people, profoundly sad. Just allow the body to express this kind of feeling and be intimate with how it feels in the body. One, two, three. And now return to this relaxed, calm, easeful posture. And now I encourage you to really give yourself wholeheartedly to this last cue, which is to imagine great joy, wonderful feeling of happiness and joy pouring through the body. Allow your body to express this joy on 1, 2, 3. Feel the sensations moving through the body. And let's return to a relaxed position. And open the eyes. The body carries feeling. Many times when we think someone else is really stupid, it would be more valuable to just notice that our body is angry. Because that's really probably the basis of what we can work on. You will not successfully cure someone of the stupidity you have imposed on them with your mind. But you may be able to take care of this through intimacy. So when I did this with the kids, when we opened our eyes, when we had done the joyful posture, we were all doing this, and I would like you to all just do it with me. Feel the energy moving from down in the pelvis all the way up through the fingertips. Draw the shoulders back, spine long. And now, let the shoulders remain back and bring the hands into a mudra in your lap. Turn the gaze down slightly. Dogen says, "The zazen I speak of is not meditation practice. It is the Dharma gate of joyful ease and repose." Just sitting. Allow the posture when you're sitting in zazen to be one of joyful ease and repose. The joy flows up, keeping the spine long and energized. Repose allows the shoulders to relax down and back, the chin to drop slightly forward. Let's close the eyes again. This is a posture that some people call noble. Sitting in this posture, we may shed feelings of being powerless, may realize that we have the opportunity to be intimate with just this body, and take responsibility for just who we are. But she too warns us in the Song of the Grassroot Hermitage, "Who would proudly arrange seats?" So we don't want to turn our noble posture into one where we think we're really quite princely and exceptional. We remain humble with our skin bag. So I would like to do a little breath practice. First foundation of mindfulness is mindfulness of breath. Well, the first foundation is mindfulness of body, and the first step is mindfulness of breath. So just bring the attention to the breathing. Let's do this with the eyes closed. Take the middle fingertip and place it just below the navel. And begin to feel the breathing moving in the lower belly. A slight expansion as we draw breath in, and a contraction as the breath goes out. And if you don't feel any motion here, you may see if you can cause some. In Zazen, we don't control the breath, but we can control the breath here right now. So begin to find a very deep breath down in the base of the abdomen. Now let's bring the middle fingertip up to the clavicle. So, near the top of the center of the rib cage. And begin to draw the breath into this upper region of the abdomen. You may feel the fingertip pushing out as we breathe in. And slightly coming inwards as we breathe out. This may take a little bit of effort. Draw in a very long, deep breath into this upper region of the chest. Now let's let the hand move back to the mudra, left fingers resting in right. And we'll begin a breath that fills in the belly. Fill up the belly with air. And then draw air up into the upper part of the chest, bottom to top. Then empty the air from the upper part of the abdomen. And at the base of the breath, let it all go from the belly. And again, filling the belly with air. Rising a column of air and filling up the chest. Empty the air from the top of the lungs. And let it go from the base of the body. Just breathe in this way, filling from low to high. And letting it go from high to low. And then just return to a relaxed breath without any sense of control. And let's open the eyes. The world is breathing, drawing air into the east from the west. Building is breathing. Body is breathing. So generally, as most of you know, when we practice Zazen, we don't practice control of the breath. We just practice intimacy with the breath that's here. But if you control your breath sometimes, no one will know. No one can tell. Feel free. It's okay. Your breath doesn't mind a little interference now and again. So actors and singers, how many people have gotten this kind of breath instruction when they were learning how to sing or act? A few. Yeah, it's pretty basic. Because if your voice comes from this place of deep bodily awareness and deep breathing, your voice can emerge with some confidence and some beauty. This is something you might want to investigate sometime when you're involved in a conflict. See if when you're speaking, where your voice is coming from. And you may see how you feel. And you may see how true to your own values your speech is. Even if you're yelling, what do we say? Do we say we're yelling from the bottom of our lungs? Tight. So, when you find yourself in difficulty, you can just stop and draw the breath down and take care of what's yours. Your particular, in this very moment, going away every moment, skin bag. This is why it's really nice to chant here. So, we'll do some chanting in a minute. Use your whole voice from the bottom of your lungs. Make something beautiful. Say something true about what really matters to you. So in Zen, the other great expression we have of intimacy with the body is doing absolutely everything with our whole heart. No problem. So we really like to emphasize doing simple work, gardening, vacuuming. The vacuum breathes. It's always inhaling. How does it do that? Sweeping, sewing, bowing. when we do traditional practice here, which we're not doing today because Sunday is contemporary practice day, we do many things in very specific ways. Why? To draw our attention into intimacy with the body, how it is. Shashu, gasho, bow. And this can be really helpful to find some simple things to do with your whole heart and your whole mind in intimacy with the body, because it's the bridge from sitting on this cushion and being like, wow, I'm really pretty darn peaceful, and going to work and being like, what's wrong with these morons? Right? We don't really want to have this great polar difference. And it can be quite helpful to just begin to draw this intimacy with the body into some simple tasks, like cooking, laundry, hugging. Nice to you. It's hard to hug, I know. Well, some people love it and some don't, so I shouldn't go too far with that. So this intimacy with the body is the Dharma gate of joyful ease and repose, as Dogen said, is the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. And he says some other things. These may be a little hard to fathom, so don't try and fathom them. Just let them come into your mind and go. To study the way with the body means to study the way with your own body. It is the study of the way using this lump of red flesh. The body comes forth from the study of the way. Everything which comes forth from the study of the way is the true human body. The entire world of the 10 directions is nothing but the true human body. The coming and going and birth and death is the true human body. When I say the entire world of the 10 directions, I mean the 10 directions are the entire world. East, west, south, north, the four midpoints, up and down, these are the 10 directions. To consider this means to understand and to resolve that this human body, undivided by self and others, is the entire world in the 10 directions. The entire universe is the true human body. The entire universe is the gate of liberation. The entire universe is the eye of the Buddha. The entire universe is the Dharma body of the self. It may seem like we're just having some little sensations here in this body, and then we're retreating into more stories about the future or the past when we practice. But Dogen suggests that we could open up to realize that just through intimacy with this body, we can completely transcend the idea that this body is separate from anything else. And this is why this practice is one that liberates us into pure love and compassionate service. Because once we see that the activity of this body is just pure connection to everything else, we can naturally move to be helpful. Just like, and it doesn't have to be exhausting. You don't have to think, oh, that person is suffering. I'm going to have to do some more hard stuff to try and make them feel better. You know, we see that it's just a body that's here with everything. It's like moving from the sun to the shade on a hot day. This is possible. Dogen says, you have a body, so you have an opportunity. At the end of the Fukan Sazengi Universal Recommendation for Zazen, he says, you have gained the pivotal opportunity of a human body. Do not pass your days and nights in vain. You are taking care of the essential activity of the Buddha way. This is your opportunity, just to be here with this. See it coming and going. Thank you. So we have a few minutes where people could make comments or ask questions or sing.
When you meditate on your own mind, your person, can that help you to think of your body as something disgusting? Does it help?
I have not used the meditation on the unattractiveness of body. So I introduced it into this talk in part because I like to just acknowledge that there are things about Buddhism that we just don't like and not pretend that they don't exist. So that's one of the reasons I put it in there, but also because it shows some a directionality. So although I personally don't do that specific practice, I do practice realizing that this body is going away. And I do practice thinking about how I'm going to die and visualizing my own death and the death of people that I love. Because that motivates me to practice. I don't just live a life of like, yeah, whatever. Another link on the old Facebook. Pretty inspiring. Yep. Just going to think about the same thing I've been thinking about for 15 years while I walk down this unbelievably beautiful street in the summer I'm not even noticing. So this mindfulness, that side of things, it inspires me personally. And it also just reminds me to not get attached to whatever wonderful thing is happening and realize that will go away too.
Are you visualizing your body dying too? Or just the people?
I do that. That's maybe another talk. But, you know, if you're interested, a really nice way to work with it is to look up the five remembrances, which is a very simple set of five phrases that you basically recite. I'm not going to go through them right now. Look them up. Other questions or observations?
I have a question then. So, you know, you talk about body meditation, and you're about that. Where do you recognize when you're getting attached to something like that? And then, how do you make it do that?
Getting attached to, like, the technique?
Well, even just the, you were talking about it in your talk, too. It's just like, when you get, if you're in yoga and you get into the, my wonderful body, right? Or any particular practice, you can go even about that.
Mm.
You get really attached to that. And how do you recognize that you're going too deep?
Well, I don't know. A wonderful question. I don't know if I wouldn't call it going too deep. Although deep in the doo-doo, I guess. maybe I'm not supposed to say that from the Dharma seat. That's a bad word. Stuck. Yeah, well, I think we just keep looking. And in a way, that's why practice of Zazen is so simple. Because, you know, whatever thought it is, we just let it go. I don't think I have a very clear answer on that. I'm sorry. But, you know, just to continually be attentive. To see where your mind is just making the same thing over and over again. And be aware that that's happening. Is helpful. I don't know if that's a helpful answer.
I think so.
If you're in a fight with someone about it, that's a bad sign. What's up, Steve?
A couple things. First of all, did this one from Princess Yodo again? I was reading in that the hidden lamp. Hmm. Did she actually didn't they have a mirror that they sat and looked at that abbey?
Yes, it's very interesting. So the poem on your on the bulletin, which will you read it, Stephen?
Heart unclouded, heart clouded, standing or falling, it's still saying body.
Yeah, so The tradition that they did, is it Tokeji? Is that the name of the temple? Yeah, Tokeji. They would meditate in front of a mirror and look at the mirror. And then there was a koan, which was like asking, what kind of feelings does the person in the mirror have? So, you know, koan practice is fun. it seems like there would be a lot to uncork on that subject, but it is interesting in that there's sort of an element of objectifying there, apparently. But, yeah. I mean, I haven't tried mirror practice. You could try that if you want to. Just don't bring your mirror into morning zazen. Or people. That would be weird.
Well, that sounds really interesting to me. It's like a further extension of watching your thoughts, watching the person you're having.
Right. Yeah. Very much so. But, you know, I really... I actually am not going to recommend mirror practice. I'm going to recommend deep awareness of the sensations of the body, trying to move beyond separation from those sensations. Just being the awareness, just being the sensation with your whole heart. That's what I'm recommending today. So I think we should move along to the next phase of our morning. Thank you all very much.